For my guest today, I have builder extraordinaire and helper-in-chief Elton Donald, Kerr Construction and Design. They have been in the city of Vancouver making magic for over 30 years now, and winning awards too. Elton, say hi.
Hello.
Thank you very much. That was exactly what I asked for. You just said hi. Perfect. Now, share a little bit more about who you are, what's your jam, let people know a little bit more about you.
Sure. My name is Elton Donald. I've been with Kerr Construction for a long time. Actually, since the summer of my grade 10 year, I started with Kerr, doing a lot of different roles that have led me to, you know, be a consultant now for the company. When I go out and meet people and we talk about sort of what they want to do for their projects and how the services that we offer at Kerr, how I might be able to help them pick out what might be best for them.
That's amazing. Before we get into anything specific, I've noticed in Vancouver and really everywhere that many people have mobility issues and have an aging population, of course. So why is it that when we build homes, we always take two or three steps to get into that home? You know, it takes two or three steps to get to that front door. What's up with that? Why are we building homes that way?
Usually when you see that, it's because you're dealing with some of the complexities around various zoning rules. In order to get, you know, full use of a lot's FSR, you have to have such and such a space above ground and such and such a space below ground. And then in order for your top two floors to be considered a main floor and upper, and the basement not to be considered a first floor, the rule states in Vancouver that the height of the main floor has to be such and such a distance above grade. And so basically, when it boils backwards to what you're saying, it's because people want to have the full amount of space that they have available to develop, and they need to have some of the space considered a basement or cellar so that they don't run over on their above grade space.
Interesting. All right. Learn something new every day.
That puts your main floor a couple meters above yeah. grade, and hence you get these stairs. Now, you know, you don't have to do it that way. Let's say, for example, you want to underdevelop the potential of your lot just because, and that's a personal choice. And you could say, okay, well, you know, I've got this beautiful lot and it has so much space available, but I just want to have a space that's right for me. And I want to have a rancher style home that doesn't have a bunch of stairs and is relatively close to grade. You can do that. It's just that from a development standpoint, you may be leaving some size on the table, which may or may not be okay for you, depending on what you want.
Interesting. Fair enough. Well, you've been in this business for a long time, 30 years. You've seen everything happen, you know, from the biggest houses, the smallest houses, mini renovations, large renovations, everything in between. Why would someone want to go through that process of a large mini renovation versus just simply buying a new home?
Actually, that's a really good question. It's different for many people. Typically, the primary driver of why a reno might be good when you're talking about a large scale reno is there's some form of maybe existing non-conforming that can't be repeated that has merit to keep. You know, let's say the house is positioned closer in a view lane, or your footprint is much bigger than you could have, or you've got a home that's got some really charming character features and pieces that you want to keep. And that might be a reason, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, people don't like to just see these homes get chewed up and munched up and hauled away to the dump and buried.
100%. Like when I talk to people and I see people like in there when they have these like just gorgeous homes for sure, and I think many of them do want to consider renovating, I've always noticed when I've asked realtors and things like that, they often say as well that it ends up being something to do with, you know, the family was born there, you know, their kids grew up there and things like that. And there's just too many memories. So they're looking to like maybe make an addition, or they're actually having more family come. So they need more space, but they just don't want to lose the neighborhood. Do you find something like that similar? Have you had that discussion when you go into your consultations?
A lot of the times it sort of centers around people's appreciation for the lot itself. And ultimately, when you're using a renovation is always going to be some form of a compromise, right? And why does someone want to pick up or do a reno? Well, you know, like I had said, there might be some existing conditions on the lot that are really worth savings. But the primary driver is because people want to save money in total dollars spent versus what they would spend total dollars spent doing a new build. And they want to try to achieve, you know, an end to some of their drivers behind why they want to do the project. And they know that a reno done right can give them that sort of new home feel, even though, you know, we're using the bones and or some of the things that the existing house had to offer.
Fair enough. So you're saying is a lot of people like to stay in their own home, which is definitely fair. And sometimes they just don't want to spend the money elsewhere. They're looking at total dollars, as you put it. Is it generally more cost effective for renovations in their current home? Is that generally what you find?
Well, it's not. So when you look at renovations on a cost per square foot basis, renovations are actually more expensive than building new. But what offsets the cost per square foot basis difference with rentals being more expensive is the retention of existing work. So, you know, you take a home and you've got a home that's got good bones, you know, it was well built. If you're so lucky, it may have 2x6 wall studs. If you're lucky again, you're going to have 2x10 floor joists, and we don't have to then completely excavate a new big hole to reform the foundation, to redo the floor framing, the wall framing, everything that you might keep. And you know, what I was alluding to earlier also is that it's the location of the lot that people really, really get into. And that in conjunction with maybe memories of the home, they just know it's a good place for them, and they want to continue to sort of work with that home. And you can. And a lot of times you can, you know, creatively, when you get together with a talented designer, they can show you things that you can do with the reno that people wouldn't realize they can do. Because, you know, when you live in a place for a long time, sometimes you get stuck in a box. Well, how would we do this? And I can't imagine. I hear this so many times. I can't imagine how this kitchen is going to be good. And that's, you know, the benefit of a talented designer is they come in and they don't have a box. They haven't been on the home for years, and they just look through walls and through, and they ask questions like, well, why can't we just put the kitchen over here and do it this way? And someone might say, I never thought of that, or holy smokes, that what a great idea. And it kind of develops, you know, when you're working with a person, you're talking about ideas, and you can kind of see it on their faces when one really sinks home and clicks and they like it and they feel that it brings them, you know, some real benefits. It's kind of fun too.
Have you had a really good moment where you've been able to see like a really big transitional change that's ever happened in that home? Like, as you mentioned, somebody would go into a home. I'm somebody personally that likes to cook a lot. So I love that big kitchen, entertaining, all of that. Have you ever had that moment when you've seen somebody really transform? Can you share a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you're in a meeting and you're delivering your design schemes that you've come up with, and you've got scheme A, and they're looking at it and they go, oh yeah, that's better. That looks kind of nice. And, you know, maybe scheme B might be something they asked you to do. And they said, you know, could you pull this wall off and maybe shift this over? And you show them that, and they're like, okay, yeah, that's kind of what I was expecting. And then you say, well, we've got this other idea here on scheme C, and then you show it to them. And you just see that, like, oh my God, this one's great. Look at the floor plan. Look at the space and how it works here, and the relationship of the kitchen to the outside deck to the family room. And, you know, in this hypothetical situation we're talking about, it clicks for them, you know, and it just, it's an undeniable moment when you're working like that together. You see it and you're like, okay, well, this is the one. Let's go with this then.
Yeah. Do you notice that does the client really have that light bulb moment that they really see it? Is that kind of what you see what happens sometimes?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, lots of times, you know. And you'll see, even as a designer, or speaking for myself as someone who contributes to the design process, you get these ideas, even maybe you think they're really good. And you say, oh my God, if we did this, can't wait to show that to the client and let them see. And then, you know, when you show it to them and you see their reaction, sometimes you get a reaction that is like, well, that maybe that's not right for me, and that's okay. That's all part of it. But a lot of times when you're really happy as a designer or as an idea presenter, when you're really excited and you're passionate about your idea and you present it to the client, and then they look at it and they go, yeah, this works for me. You got it. You listen to the things and you concentrated on solving what we had. And this really hits these items that we talked about. And that's the whole idea of bringing in talented people who aren't in your built up layered box that sort of conforms the mind and how the layout might be. You know, a good designer is going to be able to step out of that and just give you what their creativity can bring.
What have you found that customers or I'm sorry, clients have really asked about that they need to get changed? And what have you found with that? Like, is it generally always the same sort of questions? Like they want the kitchen bigger, the master bedroom bigger, or whichever. What have you found that?
Well, you're always going to get that, right? Because, you know, the primary drivers for people are your kitchens and your bathrooms and the relationship of that. And then the adjacent rooms to those spaces, not the bathrooms so much. I shouldn't say the adjacent rooms to the bathroom. Typically that's bedrooms or things like that, but especially around a kitchen. And that might be a segue into some of the things that people are doing today that they didn't do differently is so many times you go into doing a kitchen renovation for someone, but the kitchen renovation isn't just a kitchen. It's a kitchen and a wall that might have been dividing off the kitchen from the dining room. You know, as a general theme, it's opening things up a little bit more. As people are living in their homes a little bit differently than they did, let's say, back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they're looking for space to be allocated a little differently. I mean, definitely we don't want to be using as much hallways as they used to do in architecture. We don't need as much separation of rooms, and the division of rooms in a given floor can be divided with furniture layout, with ceiling light fixture placements, with things like that. So you're not losing these hall spaces, and so that you're getting a bit more of an open feel where you have people living in the spaces. They want to be able to look around and see and share that space together. And I would say the kitchen is that primary driver, going back to your original question.
Actually, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of remember when I've had friends that have done renovations or whatever, like just growing up, I remember back in the 90s even, you know, and maybe dating myself there, early millennium, when I was younger, I'd be in a friend's home or whichever. And there was always like, there was hallways dividing like, the living room to the kitchen, to the, you know, the dining room and the basement or whatever. And what ends up happening is that what you're saying, and I can kind of feel that that's what's happened overall, is that everything just opened up, really. I mean, I think everyone knows that, an open concept idea, but I guess the reason was that people just wanted to share the space with each other. It was like they wanted to watch TV, so to speak, and watch the hockey game, you know, the Canucks, and then also be near the kitchen and help out there, and just, you know, we're all living together instead of it being like everyone's separated into different rooms, and it brings more of that family vibe. Is that what you're finding similar?
Well, sure. I when you talk about preferences, you know, I'll speak for my own preferences. When I have a space that was divided, because I've done several rentals for myself as well, and when I open it up, I really like the creation of a great room. You know, where you have a dining room and an informal living room backing onto a kitchen. And, you know, like everybody knows, the party always ends in the kitchen. You know, you're sitting around and chatting and maybe you're preparing a last little course or something and sharing a glass of wine with your friends or whatever your beverage of choice is. Just that sort of open space that's all one. You know, someone's sitting on the couch watching the game. Someone's sitting at your island and you're chatting with the guy on the couch and you're chatting with the guy on the island. It's just, I don't know, I like having my own personal space that way and can really appreciate how other people might also like it as well as I do.
Absolutely. You mentioned several times already that, like, you know, how you work with a designer, and if the designer comes in and really kind of changes the space, can you share a little bit more about the relationship between the builder and the designer, how that synergy works, and, you know, how it's really able to help the client to make sure that the builder and designer work well together?
Yeah, that's always tough, and because there's sort of a traditional relationship, and a traditional relationship would be you hire an architect, you work your design with an architect, and the architect offers sort of a general grounding to the budget and a general grounding to what it is that you're trying to achieve, because, you know, the architect has that expertise and that's what they bring to the table. After the design is done, you then start looking for a builder to contribute and add to that team. And, you know, sometimes, I'm not saying every time, but sometimes the budget can get away from you in that stage. And so you start bringing in contractors and they start giving you budgets that maybe were a little bit higher. And this is why if I talk about that sort of designer builder relationship, maybe this is one of the reasons that for renovations and what we do, I really feel that being a design build firm brings some competitive advantage to the game. You know, at the same time that we're being creative, we're continually grounding what we want to do against a budget. I'm not saying that, you know, work myself, I've never had my budget get high and have to figure out how to value engineer. But one of the differences is that we do that a little bit earlier in the process, so we don't get so far down a path before we might have to value engineer. You know, we're doing the design and we're budgeting the design, and that design budget is done in real time. And I think that brings a real benefit to the client because they're continually grounding good ideas. When you talk about budgets with a construction project and you talk about design is going to give continual upward pressure to the budget. You know, all these good ideas, they bring things, but every time you bring something, that also unfortunately brings cost. And so, you know, you can get that snowball effect where you're like, well, seeming as I've done this, I might as well just add that and add that. And, you know, what started out with a small ball is now this big, huge round ball, and the budget has just been pushed up and pushed up. So, you know, when you're doing a design budget, what I think the benefit is that you're getting continual costing feedback and construction sort of how-tos with a design build firm in the designer and builder relationship that you were alluding to.
I liked how you alluded to a couple of things in there regarding like costs and how things can kind of balloon out of proportion. Can you share a little bit more about some of those mistakes that clients should be looking out for to make sure that they stay on track? What are some key areas where clients have made some errors?
If we think of it in terms of an error, we have to be saying, well, what was the error for, right? At least this is just the way my brain is wired when I think about what your question is. It was an error that we raised the budget. Okay, then it's really comes back to what I was talking about earlier, is that a renovation is always going to have some form of compromise. And I think if I would try and say what an error might be or what it is, I think it's the clients who won't compromise. They tend to drive their own personal budget up higher because they just want it to be just so. And maybe that puts them at a higher budget range than they really felt comfortable initially. And that's because they just didn't want to compromise.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you mentioned about renovations and not wanting to compromise. What if I wanted to go in a completely different direction and tear down the house and build a new house on that wonderful lot that we talked about? Say I want to stay in that location. What if I want to go in that direction and just build all new? How would something like that work?
In general, if you've made the decision that there's not enough sort of retention merit in your home, then the process is to start with a feasibility study or a concept creation. And so, you know, we do up some floor plans on an initial level so that we can have something to measure from and something to confirm and show you in order to communicate design intent, where we can look at these things together and we can say, okay, well, based on this, your end value of this might be, let's say, $1.5 million. So if you want to build this home, it's going to have a few more features in it. It's going to have some things that you've mentioned that you want, but let's say this is going to be $1.5 million. And again, it comes down, compromise is always something in project planning, right? So if you say, I just want custom details and I just want it to be exactly how I envision or the designer and I drive it, then cost is going to come in again. You know, simple features are generally more easy to execute and thereby less expense for the end purchaser. So it starts out with that little bit of design, as I said. And what that does for you is that without tendering all of the various professionals that you need and bringing them in, it allows you to see differences in what might be a potential home. You know, for us, we'll do what we call a massing model, where we'll build a sort of an initial 3D home that we can show you how it looks. You know, we'll spin you around the home. We'll be able to fly you through the house and show you the rooms and the relationship. And generally, you know, we'll try and populate it with just some place setter furniture, just so you can see the feel and the layout. And by doing that up front, it allows us to do something that's really important, is that we do the zoning review for the lot, so that when we're showing you these ideas, and you know, any good designer is going to do this as well, right? It's not exclusive to us, but when we're showing you these ideas, we're showing you ideas that you can do. We've pre-vetted those, and we're showing you things that you can build in locations that you can build that satisfy the offsets, that satisfy total heights. That's important to do as part of your pre-construction process when you're considering doing a new build.
you touched on something there that I thought was a little interesting. You discussed about a program that you're able to show clients and almost fly them through the home, as you put it. Share with me a little bit more about like the different technologies that you're using now and how much of an effect that's had on the client experience as well as the contractor, builder, designer experience.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm old enough that I can recall actually looking at physical 3D models that were built on modeling tables to show a prospective client what their home was going to be. I mean, those were so cool, but you know, for what we're able to do digitally nowadays, we can really eliminate that sort of misunderstanding of what someone's getting when they look at a 2D plan. You know, when you're looking at the images that we create in the software programs that we use, and we use a number of software programs. We use Revit, we use Chief Architect, even SketchUp with some plug and plays. But when you show the person what is essentially a picture or let's say a video of what their home is going to be, they really understand what they're seeing and what they're doing. And you're able to build up that level of understanding to a point where the client really knows what they're going to get. And that really helps with expectations.
When clients are looking to build now and renovate now, what are the most popular trends that you're seeing? What are people really excited about doing now? Where are things going?
We do a lot more sort of inside out spaces. You know, where some of the door technologies that have come in with these multi-slides or eclipse systems, they allow you to make a really nice relationship between what is an exterior space and what is an interior space. And they allow you to sort of blur the lines in these summer months that, you know, we here in the Lower Mainland get blessed with. And I think that's something that comes in. And then, of course, one of the second things that people are reaching out for is pretty much every home now that we're doing has a great room in it. We're no longer seeing, you know, people reaching out for real defined second spaces. I mean, there's some, of course, but that's why you have bespoke design. You have to work with your client and what their preferences are. But, you know, your question was, what's the general theme? I would say that sort of inside-outside space and a great room space.
Amazing. I find myself always really interested in, like, when you mentioned inside outside spaces, like, I love that the sliding doors or the ones that, like, kind of almost like garage doors, like, they open up. And, like, I've seen houses do that, like, from the kitchen to the deck, and they just kind of open it up that way. And I just think it looks absolutely spectacular when it all comes together. So I could definitely see how that is so popular. Outside of those trends, where are rooms that are people really working on? As you mentioned about one great room space, what are the renovated rooms that people are generally looking for to consistently work on? Is it just the kitchen?
No, you know, generally what we see is people looking to improve a floor plan that they have and maybe hit on some of their finishes that might be dated in a room. So you talk about, person calls you up and says, hey, I want to do a kitchen. And you're like, okay, well, you go out and you meet them and you're on site and you're chatting about what they want to do. And really, yes, they want to do a kitchen, but they want to figure out how they can get a better relationship, a space, or they want to figure out how they can fix a choke point in their kitchen. Very few times do you ever see someone just that says, you know, hey, I love my layout. I love this. Just give me new cabinets and finishes and keep the existing. Usually people want to bring and add and improve that floor plan layout.
Right. That makes sense. What are like the keys to success for a client? Is it just when they're prepared, or like what are people really looking for, and how can they make sure that they're successful when working with someone like you?
I think keys to success for some clients are to ensure that you have a good relationship with the person that you're going to engage with. You know, do some research on them, make sure that you're comfortable with their demonstrated skill set, make sure that they can show you projects of a similar like kind and quality that you're interested in. You'll have some proven sort of results that you can begin with. And then once you have that in place, really make sure that you've got a good fit with the person. We're all just people here, you know? We all have our own dreams, we all have our own wants. And when we're working together with like-minded people, you generally get a much better process. And you want to make sure that the person you're working with is going to have a same dynamic, friendly interaction with you in the beginning when you're a prospective client. And likewise, once you're working together, you want that same good person that you thought you had when there might be a challenge or a problem that you have to look at together. And you want to be able to have someone who's a good communicator and can bring you good solutions and who's going to take responsibility for making sure that it gets done just so.
Absolutely. When you've been working with clients, you've been working with clients for a lot of years, and you've had, you know, amazing transformations of homes. Can you share a little bit more about a story, like from beginning to end, that was really your wow moment, made you realize that this was the industry for me and you are doing the right thing and it's just the perfect fit? Can you share a little bit more about that story, that wow moment?
Yeah, but that happened for me like when I was a little kid. You know, I knew I liked building things. I was that kid who was building tree forts out in the front yard from when he was 7 years old. Like back, I grew up in East Van, and I'm out in the front of my house there. And I used to live at, I don't know, 34th and Gladstone. We had these big trees in the front. We built so many tree forts, and it was just something that we all did as neighborhood kids. We loved it. And I just knew that I enjoyed building and constructing and working with my hands. And fortunately for me, I had the opportunity to grow and move into the role I am now, where I can bring that sort of hands-on experience to the table for people who are, you know, looking for solutions and how to do things. That's where I bring in. So, you know, a cool story about, you know, clients and whatnot. It's really hard for me because there's so many. You know, you go into the industry and you end up making so many lifelong friendships with people, and it's hard to pick out just one that you want to put over another. But definitely they're there, and there's some real cool relationships that you build, and friendships that I hold to this day of people who I worked with 15 years ago.
For sure. That's great. You know, I really appreciate the fact that you're open enough to say like, hey, look, I've had a million stories. There's a million opportunities. And that happens because you work with so many clients all the time. I loved your story about growing up in East Van and building those tree forts. What was the best tree fort you built? What did it look like?
it was the one that got the tree cut down, unfortunately.
Okay.
And this, you know, Vancouver, the no fun city, you know, someone had decided that they didn't want neighborhood kids building tree forts in the trees anymore. And, you know, there were so many families and kids that we would get together to build these forts. But I would say that the one that we did right in front, we had separate levels, little rooms. We had a little tire swing on the bottom, a little bridge to different spaces in the tree. It was just awesome.
That does sound awesome. Well,
it was pretty cool.
That does sound amazing. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Elton. I really appreciate you being here today. Is there one final like golden nugget that if someone could walk away with one final piece from this chat with you, what would that be?
Just that concentrating on doing some design and layout in the beginning, going slowly in the beginning, lets you go faster at the end and take your time up front. You know, work these solutions, vet them, play devil's advocate and say, why wouldn't this work? What's wrong with this? You know, and challenge yourself to look at those. And when you do that well enough, you really end up getting a project that serves you well for decades.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again. If anyone wanted to get a hold of you, Elton, how would they do that?
Yeah, super easy. You could call me on my office at Kerr Construction. You can look us up at kerrconstruction.ca. They can give me a shout on my cell phone, 604-202-6675. I always take calls. They could call the office. I'm in and out so often that I generally get people to call my cell anyways. Or they can look at us on House or Facebook and, you know, all those social media things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. If anyone has any questions for me and is interested in getting a little bit more information about their mortgage solutions, I'm happy to help. Look me up at kofskymortgage.ca. And, you know, I'm definitely happy to help there. And thank you very much. And I hope you have a great day.
Thanks. Cheers.